Welcome in to this Friday edition of Faith and Family. Your temporary host, Rod Zwanitzer, welcoming you to the program. No matter where you're listening, worldwide or here in the greater St. Louis area, looked on the analytics this morning. We had people listening from almost 15 countries and 45 U.S. states. So welcome, everybody. And a great way to listen to us worldwide is with a Wi-Fi radio. I bought one for my wife. It is a great thing. Easy to set up, easy to work. And we're giving away one of these Wi-Fi radios each month for the next year. Month of May, to celebrate the gift of moms, we're giving away a Wi-Fi radio to someone that gives their best entry of why their mom should get this Wi-Fi radio. So follow us there on Facebook. It'll give you all the details, or you can get the link to the details and the contest as well on our website, kfuo.org. We're finishing up a week here on Faith and Family, which is underwritten by our good friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin, on family devotions. And this is just one of my favorites because I am just a crazy chef. It's one of my favorite hobbies and has been for a lot of years. And so I'm happy to welcome in a real chef who's done some amazing work and has some great cookbooks. I've had him on my book talk program. He's the former chef at the White House guest house called Blair House. And his name is Russell Cronkite. And the book that we want to share with you today is Return to Sunday Dinner, The Simple Delight of Family Foods and Friends. Russell, welcome to Faith and Family.
Rod, thank you so much. It's nice to be with you again.
You know, we had you on right before December, and I know a lot of people told me they bought it as gifts. I know I did, too. This is just a delightful cookbook, and your time there at Blair House, the White House official guest quarters, you got to cook for Presidents Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. Is that right?
That's correct, and actually more important. We often said that you know, the White House had one president. We had all the rest of them. So it was a matter of serving those guests that were there as the official guests of those particular presidents, and so that includes Queen Elizabeth and the Emperor and Empress of Japan and Lech Walesa and Vaclav Havel and Margaret Thatcher, and the list goes on of people that we had the pleasure and honor of being able to serve and cook for.
Did you ever get any weird requests, like in the middle of the night for a snack or something?
Well, sure. It's a guest house, and as a guest house, it's a place where you want to relax and get away from the normal hub of Washington, D.C., and kick off your shoes. And people, of course, are running around the city at formal dinners and gala events and intense negotiations and want to come home and have a grilled cheese sandwich or a cup of soup at the end of the day. So certainly there were times when we had people just wanting to have something simple, comforty from home, like graham crackers and milk.
So you got that request?
Absolutely. I mean, we did formal dinners, of course, and we did foods that would be typical of a American Sunday dinner, and we did you know, very nice, wonderful, you know, galas and cocktail parties. But also, it was a home away from home for those who stayed. And like I say, you know, you get off the day at the end of the office hours, and you want to just come home and relax. And you've been eating big meals all day long, and all you really want to do is have a cup of tomato soup and go to bed.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the beauty of Blair House, is that it's a home away from home for world leaders.
Now, for the chef staff there, Russell, do they have living quarters? Does somebody there is around the clock to take care of the dining needs, or not so? You just came, the chef staff, the kitchen staff just came in?
No, I'm sure it's the same way. I left there over a decade ago, but I had a room on the fourth floor, and so during the time when there was an official state visit, we were all there around the clock, 24 hours a day. So although I was 12 and a half miles from my home, I might as well have been 1,200 miles. I was there, you know, around the clock from the wee hours of the morning to the late hours at night. taking care of whatever those needs happen to have been.
Now, what occurred, Russell, for you to want to author this amazing book? And this truly is a great book. Many of us out there can really, have the wonderful thoughts about Sunday family meals. What inspired you to develop and bring to fruition this delightful cookbook?
Well, Sunday dinner has always been a time-honored tradition in our country. The Sunday meal, is where we celebrate with recipes that are part of our heritage, what I call heirloom recipes. I grew up in an extended family, and we got together on Sunday afternoons at my grandparents' house. I learned to cook the basic things in my grandmother's kitchen, helping to peel potatoes and core apples and make pie dough. And I've said before and written before that at my grandmother's house there were no slackers. So when we came over, her five kids and their spouses, my aunts and uncles and the 12 cousins, everybody had to pitch in and do something to help set the table or clear the table or do the dishes, help to serve, help to prep. And I found out at an early age that if you helped grandma in the kitchen, you didn't have to do dishes. So I really loved being in the kitchen and learned from her the gift of hospitality and learned from her the pleasure of being able to do a job well and honor God with your craft and your creativity. So that's always been a part of my life. And so when my wife and I were married, which was 40 years ago, and when we began a family 35 years ago, we wanted to have those same kinds of memories. And so we began to have Sunday dinner in our home and meet together with friends from the community and friends from church and friends from our neighborhood and extend that same kind of hospitality and explore the traditional foods of America in the process and build those kinds of lifelong relationships that come from gathering around the family table or the table of fellowship.
I can just really relate to all that, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there as well. And you can participate in this show. This is a call-in show. So call us with your questions or comments for Russell on any chef matters, and especially family dinners on Sunday or whenever you worship, and using devotions in those. Call us in the St. Louis area, 314-505-7850, worldwide, 1-800-730-2727, or email us at family@kfuo.org. To the person who sends us the best question or comment, we're going to give them a copy of Russell's great cookbook, Return to Sunday Dinner. You can't have mine. I'm not giving it up yet. But we're Russell and his publisher have kindly supplied that. So someone's going to get this delightful cookbook. So call us, send us an email, and let's talk about devotions during Sunday dinners. What I fondly remember about Sunday dinner, Russell, and I know you talk about this too, is that it was a place that my parents required all of us in the family to sit around the table, dressed in our Sunday best, the best table service that we had, fresh-cut flowers, all the rest. And my dad used it as a time to kind of gather and talk as a family. We learned the art of conversation, which I know you talk about, and manners. And we had family and friends, big groups sometimes. And so we learned that. And I think there's so many important benefits and blessings to this return to Sunday family dinners.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that it causes us to really be able to touch our past as well and to build the memories that will help to define who we are. It's a day to really bring our Sunday best, to honor God and honor our families with the best that we have to offer. And that doesn't mean that you have to be well off. We certainly weren't well off. And so, it is the day when we wore our nicest clothes and shoes and try to remember our company manners, where we set the table with our most beautiful linens and china. But those foods were simple foods, roast beef and mashed potatoes and corned beef and things like chicken and dumplings and fried chicken and black bottom banana cream pie and rhubarb pie and the kinds of foods that really make up the American table. So this wasn't fancy food in that sense. It was comfort food, but comfort food done the best that we could do with the best that we had to offer, the Sunday roast. And so I think that, you know, there's something very special when we take that table. I've often described it this way. The dining room table where we read the paper and do the crossword puzzle and do our taxes and where the kids do their homework and play games during the week becomes that special place on Sunday when we lay out that heirloom tablecloth and the heirloom china from our grandparents and we have wonderful flowers and we create an environment that makes the moment memorable that we pass down from generation to generation. So here I am, 60 years old, talking about the memories I have of my grandmother's table and my mother's table and what I learned at that table. I learned, as you said, company manners. I learned how to take coats. I learned how to take on and carry on adult conversations. And my children learned the same kinds of things, which gives them an advantage in life as they become adults. And, of course, now they have their own Sunday meals. And so it is this very special place where we offer our Sunday best, and what we get in return are memories and relationships. And part of that is, you know, that adult conversation is really having our conversation centered around what about the sermon we heard today? Wasn't that a wonderful hymn? What did that hymn represent? What did we learn from that? And being able to have conversations that are not just about baseball and politics and mowing the lawn and doing daily chores, but being able to take that set aside time and also making our conversations special where we lift up one another and where we have true fellowship.
Yeah, and I think what we're talking about is the creation of heirlooms. Heirloom recipes, as you described from your grandmother, how precious are those? And what I like about your collection here too, Russell, is in a lot of ways it accounts for regions of the country, and you've lived and cooked in a lot of those. And so it brought back to your mind some of these heirloom experiences for you and your family with not only family, but your church family and so forth. And so it's a great opportunity to develop these for your family, for your friends, for your extended family. And that's what I really love about your approach. And so it's not even using your recipe collection, but as a starter thought. And, you know, the only criticism I have of your cookbook, Russell, and this is just really a bad one, every time I look at it or think about it, I start salivating. The recipe collection is so good, and your photography is so wonderful. And, you know, you also have this neat section in there that says, you know, if you don't have time, here's some ways to cut back. I think you call it easy time-saving and do-ahead tips.
Correct.
And you know, so we hear the professional chef in you coming out and saying, hey, you know, you can do some stuff ahead, or if you want to cut some stuff out, or we do this. And that's wonderful, for I think, for all of us of any cooking level, that you don't have to be a professional chef like you to do this. And you know, a lot of this I found myself as I cook through these. Sometimes I would do the entire menu that you have, and other times I would just say, gosh, I don't like that. Like you had, I think it was some kind of a hominy bread.
Right, hominy spoon bread.
Yeah, and I don't like hominy at all, so I just junked that, and I did brought in another recipe I have. And so that's the neat part of it, isn't it? That it sometimes is thought starters, get you going maybe to a place of the country or the world that you lived, and develop your own menu, and you kind of get us started. And if you just want to follow some, I mean, you've got things for Thanksgiving and on and on. And it's just delightful. You know, one that, again, is my favorite was when you lived in Colorado. And you talked about, I think it was kind of an out-in-the-country type church fellowship that you were a part of, you and your family. And you had great open-air meals out there when the weather permitted. And you caught fresh trout and then cooked them there. And you reminisced about the great fellowship that you and your family had there. And you know, I could almost put myself into a nice little meadow scene by a brook or a stream there in Colorado, and fresh brook trout or a brown, whatever else you could catch. And I started salivating again.
That's just... Well, you know, we've been very fortunate. And, of course, my career took me all over the country. in the hospitality industry, and so, you know, that's not uncommon to live all over the country. But, you know, we are the great melting pot, and our families come from all over the world and all over the place. And so my grandmother was born in Texas. Her family were Cherokee and Scots-Irish from Georgia, and my grandfather was originally from Virginia, and they met in the Oklahoma Territories, traveled across the country. They were married in Seattle in 1909, and so my uncles and aunts and my uncles were born up and down the Union Pacific Railway line in Portland and Seattle and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and my wife and I have lived in Colorado and New Mexico and Texas and Georgia and here in Washington, D.C., And so you have all these experiences from all these places, but you also have all these experiences from your cultural heritage that, you know, we draw upon. And so we're sort of French, Italian, German, Dutch, African, you know, Native Americans that if we trace our ancestry back, we've got so many different cultures that we can draw from and celebrate. And as we live in different parts of the country, we learn that there are different and distinct ways of doing things. A really good example is to talk about barbecue because there's no barbecue in my book, but, you know, you can start a war over who has the best barbecue and what is real barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can do the same thing with chicken and dumplings. So my chicken and dumplings is a very Midwest style of chicken and dumplings, which I got from my grandmother. But in Pennsylvania, they do chicken and dumplings and what are called slick noodles. And in the South, they have chicken and dumplings, which are a little bit different. And it's the same with fried chicken. I have a wonderful recipe from my grandmother for fried chicken, butter, you know, milk fried chicken. But each one of us in our own experience, you know, if I'm to ask somebody, well, who makes the best fried chicken or who makes the best chicken and dumplings, everyone, you know, people are going to say, my grandmother did, you know. And so we all have these memories. And so as I go through putting together a book and looking at having a menu from the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic and the Northwest and the Midwest and the Deep South and the Great Lakes states, and really capturing all of America in my menus, it's my own experience, but also recipes that would be indicative of that area of the country and the different heritage that ethnic groups that settled in that area of the country, and knowing full well that one recipe cannot reflect the entire community because everybody has one particular way or special ingredient that they add to something. So what I've tried to do is really create a menu and create a book full of recipes that, you know, captures sort of the essence of that area, and trust and hope that people will make it their own by adding their own memory and their own special ingredient and their own unique way of doing things. But if they are just starting out with a family and don't have the benefit of having been raised by a grandmother as I was and learning how to cook at home, it's just a great place to start. Every ingredient is available at a regular grocery store. These are cost-effective, well-balanced meals. You don't need to go to some specialty store to buy some weird esoteric ingredient that costs $10 a jar. Regular food for regular folks, but special food because these are the Sunday dinner favorites.
And, you know, the thing that I hear constantly from you great culinary experts is that the best way to cook is get the very freshest, the very best ingredients that you can find. And those are so readily available throughout the country anymore. We have farmers markets all over and access to great fresh produce, livestock, all the rest, where I remember growing up, a lot of my dislike for, especially for vegetables, were that they weren't real fresh. They were usually canned. And I detested them. I remember, like, growing up, the thing that I hated the worst was this little chopped up diced beets, you know, out of the can. I couldn't stand those things. But one of my favorite things in the world now is beets, where I found that roasting them in aluminum foil with a little olive oil on them, oh, my goodness.
Actually mentioned the chapter Mountain's Majesty with the trout, and I start out in the in the cookbook with a what has now become an American classic, which roasted red beets with goat's cheese salad. When we lived up there in the mountains, we had friends that raised goats, and there was always fresh goat's cheese around. And of course, in a cold climate like that, beets can grow, most of the year. Like most root vegetables, will be readily available. But you're right, that wonderful taking something that, you may have not loved from your childhood and really learning to explore it again is a wonderful way of looking and, being able to grow in the way that we approach food. And then, of course, the advantage then with our children is that the more we expose our children to at an early age, then the less picky they are. As they grow up. And
yes.
So, we do have so many foods. We are so blessed as a nation to have so much bounty, and we have so many foods that are available. And not just foods that we grew up with, but we are continuing to be a nation of immigrants. And so now every generation we bring a whole new different types of foods and cooking styles into our repertoire, into the great melting pot. That makes American cooking so unique.
And, I can well remember, too, Russell, my dad especially, who really kind of would develop the conversation around this family Sunday meal. And he, coming from a farm background, both he and my mom, he would always talk to us about the bounty of God's goodness to us in the wonderful agriculture of the country. And we would, in prayer and talk, we would thank him for the farmers, the ranchers, and the people that distributed and got our food ready. And for so long, I didn't quite understand where he was coming from until I grew a little older and had a chance to go on some relatives' farms and ranches, and I saw this wonderful industry that supplies this out of God's wonderful bounty. And that has kind of become a heritage, an heirloom for me too, when I'm with people to talk about that sometimes we forget. And I know you chefs are really into this and make us alert to this, of the fine purveyors of all this wonderful things we have today. And I think as we are exposed to more and more of the world's cuisines, it even starts to expand for me, Thai food. I go through phases, I was into pot stickers for a long time and that whole culture. And so there's so much to explore and have fun and to thank God. And as a family and including friends and people you pull in from outside, to really rejoice in how good God is to us through this bounty.
No, you're absolutely correct. And, going back just to the whole idea of Sunday dinner, because I've described Sunday dinner as a gift. It's a gift that we give to each other and we give to our children and pass on to our children's children. And that diversity of flavors, the diversity of, our culture, the diversity of our heritage, are parts of that gift that we bring and that every new immigrant group brings to our nation to enrich it. And as we explore these foods from our immigrant parents and grandparents, and we explore the foods from our, different regions of the country, we develop foods that are unique, and they become something special to us. It's interesting. We have different senses, and the sense of smell is a very strong and powerful sense, and even today, when I go to the airport and I'm standing in line, and it seems like it's always just such terrible, timing, the way that it's set up. You're standing in line, and right over there where you can't get to is a Cinnabons.
Oh yeah, I hate that.
And the coffee and the cinnamon, and I'm walking through the line, and I'm standing in line, and I'm thinking, oh, I wish I could just have one. But the smell of the cinnamon, just transports me back to my grandmother's kitchen. And
we need like Jimmy John's for Cinnabons, that they bring it right to you in the line while you're waiting.
Exactly.
We're gonna have to go, Russell. I hate to interrupt, but let's pick it up right there when we come back on Faith and Family. Please stick with us as we talk about restoring Sunday family dinners and devotions to our wonderful great God here on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Here's an important development and a huge victory in the ongoing battle with Barack Obama trying to force religious organizations to fund drugs that cause abortion. The HHS mandate generated lawsuits from more than 100 Protestants and Catholics opposed to the heavy hand of government. Good news. The Obama administration gave up its fight with Tyndale House Publishers. They're the largest Christian publisher of books in the world. An attorney for Alliance Defending Freedom said Mr. Obama knows how ridiculous it sounds, arguing a Bible publisher isn't religious enough to qualify as a religious employer. Every day I'm hearing of more and more people opposed to implementing Obamacare. Let's pray God will spare us from this boondoggle.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service has been there for me since I began the American leg of my journey as a refugee. Their staff helped me and my family to a local church in the community where I resettled, a church whose hospitality could not have been more important in my transition to a welcoming American society. Learn more about Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and journeys like mine, LIRS.org.
In the Missouri Synod, we talk about our church's mission in terms of witness, mercy, and life together. Deaconesses help us achieve our mission by teaching the faith, performing acts of mercy, and providing spiritual care. Outreach programs, counseling, hospital and shut-in calls, women's Bible studies, music, campus ministry, VBS, youth work, and much more. Think about it. Is it time for your congregation to have a deaconess? For more information, please contact your district president.
Perhaps you're a regular worshiper at the church of your choice, or maybe it's difficult for you to get to church on Sunday morning. Either way, you'll benefit from our live worship broadcast each week on KFUO. The early service begins at 8:15, originating from Ascension Lutheran Church in St. Louis Hills, where Reverend Charles Spomer serves as pastor. Late worship at 10:45 comes from Hope Lutheran Church in St. Anne, where Pastor Tim Ostermeyer leads worship. Join us for the message of salvation in Jesus Christ, Sunday mornings on KFUO.
The Boy Scouts of America has voted to allow gay scouts, but to ban gay scout leaders. Wayne Brock is chief executive of Boy Scouts of America.
Our goal through all of this was to put kids first.
Some church groups and liberal organizations applaud the change, but others, like On My Honor Net's John Stemberger, are condemning the new policy.
It's going to sexualize and just politicize the program. It's a sad day for the Boy Scouts of America.
Some churches who support scouting say they'll leave. Major Muslim groups in Britain are uniting their voices to condemn Wednesday's fatal attack on a soldier who was killed by two Islamic extremists. They bragged in cell phone video images to shocked bystanders that there will be more violence to avenge Muslims. But the head of the British Muslim Council called the attack a senseless act of violence and contrary to Islam.
Let me state here and now that nothing at all justifies this action.
Officials have linked the attackers to extremist groups. I'm Norman Hall.
Prices are rising, the devil's to pay. Moving the mountain that got in the way. Prayer books and meetings to find a plan. Deciding the fate of the family of man.
Welcome back to Faith and Family on a Friday. Beautiful family here in a wonderful Friday in St. Louis, Missouri, USA, and hope it is where you are too. We are talking here, closing out a week on family devotions with just a great finale here, a cookbook by an ex-White House chef, a chef with more than 40 years of experience about returning to Sunday family dinners. And our guest, Russell Cronkite, he writes on this, Sunday is a full-hearted celebration of our American culture, our deep religious heritage, our unique regional cuisine, and our time-honored traditions of hospitality, welcome, and ease. You can join us on this by calling in at 314-505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can even email us at family@kfuo.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you give your question or comment to Russell. And the best one of those receives a copy of Russell's cookbook, Return to Sunday Dinner. Russell, I love your wordsmithing here in this book, too. And what I just read there, I think, just brings back such fond memories for a lot of us. The Sunday dinner was not just a great meal. You didn't have to have the linens or the china or the crystal or the fancy silverware. What really was important was that family was together. And I know that so many factors in our life today seem to want to keep us away from that. Tough to get everybody together at the same time. But I think a lot of families, especially when they're of younger age, and I know my dad almost insisted on this, that we gather together as the family to go to church and then the family meal after it on Sunday or whatever you worship. And not only was it good food and good conversation, but, you know, Dad always made it a spiritual experience. And, you know, one of the ways that he did it was the prayer. And he would always ask for, you know, prayer requests. And you know, we would have some amazing things that even our guests and relatives would ask for that the rest of us wouldn't be even aware of. And so what great times, these quiet times to contemplate life's challenges, give God thanks for each other, and then join in some, we used to have real animated, provoking discussions around our table. And I can still fondly remember those with great meals. So all that really, I think, gathers together to say to a lot of us, if we're not doing that, let's return.
Well, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I think is important here is that it takes discipline. It is true. My wife and I raised three children. They had soccer practice. We had choir practice. We church on Sunday morning. We were busy. I had a high-pressure job. You know, but you have to set aside time, just like you have to set aside time as a couple to have date night and to go out to dinner and spend time together to stay in love. You have to spend time and set aside time to go to PTA meetings and to make sure that you're involved in your children's school. And so to take 4 hours out of a day on a Sunday once a week to set aside that time to make it a special place, like having Thanksgiving every week, does take discipline, but the value that you gain from that is so wonderful. We know as a society, and we've learned this from a lot of different sources over the years, that the family meal is incredibly important, and the family that takes time to have a meal together a couple of times during the week, their children do better in school, they're more socially adjusted, they're less likely to struggle with substance abuse, they're less likely to, you know, be, you know, develop bad habits, and, you know, they are more disciplined. And, you know, because you create this forum for being able to, you know, spend time together and being able to talk with one another. And so, you know, the value to the family meal is, you know, a high priority value. But we are all busy during the week, and so it's really difficult to have all the family together, you know, on a Monday evening or Tuesday or Wednesday or, you know, after school. There's so many different activities that are going on. So Sunday really is the best day. And it's the most convenient day, but it still takes discipline. But the rewards to the family are tremendous. And, you know, that's really what the book is about. That's why we did that with our children. It's interesting. My children are now in their early 30s. We have three grandchildren. And some of my children's closest friends, those lifelong friendships, are the relationships that they built with other children of families who are invited to our home for Sunday dinner. Wow. You talk about the conversations that you have, holding hands and praying around the table. Are you going to feel comfortable doing that in a restaurant? It just amazes me. People will go to church and say, well, let's go over here out to a restaurant. How are you going to carry on those kinds of intimate, wonderful conversations, the really hurting conversations, the really vulnerable conversations, the really joy-filled conversations, mm-hmm. in a public environment with a waiter coming and going and people pouring coffee and bringing your check?
Yep.
No. It's in the quiet of our home that we develop those kinds of relationships and those kinds of friendships. And so I really encourage people, you know, take the time, set aside a time, not just for the value of the wonderful meal and the foods we share and the memories that we create with the heirloom recipes, but the time of real, real, genuine conversation where we build lifelong relationships.
And you know what's really exciting for me, Russell, is that being such a foodie as I am, one of my biggest joys is, and I really didn't even push her this, my older granddaughter who's just graduating from high school. If you're listening out there, Britt, way to go. I'm so proud of you. She's going into the Navy to be trained as a gourmet chef.
Oh, good for her.
And I'm so excited. And I think I had a role in that because from a little age, she liked to cook, and we cooked together and would prepare just elaborate meals for the rest of the family and friends. So we've also got a caller on the line here. Carolyn, welcome into Faith and Family. Where are you calling from, and do you have a question or comment for our guest, Russell Cronkite?
Yes, hi. I'm calling from Arnold, Missouri, but I grew up in Southeast Missouri and came to St. Louis after high school. And I do remember the Sunday dinners my mother always had. They were always special, even though we had meals every night at home. Plus days, you know, during the school year, we came home for lunch.
Wow, so those deals with the family on Sunday were the special, special dinners for you.
It was fried chicken.
Oh, boy. And some of those, you know, special family recipes, as Russell was saying, are the very best, aren't they? And you can't quite ever have that matched anywhere else.
And it was very, you would take it to talk about the things that happened during the week, you know, with your family. It was just a good thing to have on Sunday dinners. And some of my aunts and uncles, we'd go there for dinners. And sometimes at my aunt's house, all the men would eat first. And then the women would, you know, wait on them, you know, get their dishes out and that, the bowls of them. And they would eat first, and the women would eat later and have more time to talk to each other.
Wow. And that is one of the big blessings that Russell is sharing with us, that it having it at your home rather than at a crowded restaurant, you can get intimate, you can have devotional times, you can invite Christ in not only to bless the meal but to be there as a conversationalist with you and share things, and that is just delightful. Carolyn, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your memories. Russell, that's such an important thing, isn't it, that what Carolyn is sharing with us, that it is about the building of memories. I think we're kind of zeroing in on that.
Oh, absolutely. It is those memories. And so, you know, you look back at that time, and, you know, it's the same thing with Thanksgiving. How many of us, every year we get together and we have turkey and we have stuffing or dressing and we have cranberries, we have a particular meal that our whole nation, it's almost like a national communion. We get together and we have this wonderful meal that creates these memories. And we can look back through our lives at Christmas, at Easter, at Thanksgiving, at Mother's Day, at Father's Day, where we as a family or as a nation, we prepare specific kinds of food, the first barbecue of Memorial Day. You know, we have these foods that become touchstones to our lives, but they remind us of the significance of that holiday. And so Sunday is the same kind of thing, except that it's a holiday that comes every week.
Every week, yeah. There you go.
And you build these memories that go back. And I was telling you earlier before the break of walking into the airport and smelling Cinnabons, and suddenly I'm remembering my grandmother's house, or that when I smell sage, or when I'm walking down the street and I'm getting the smoke out of a restaurant, and I can smell, you know, the hickory, and I'm suddenly thinking back to, you know, barbecue at my uncle's house on Memorial Day, and these wonderful ribs that my mother made, and they bring back all these wonderful memories that we have. And that's the wonderful thing about the sense of smell and the sense of taste. Mm-hmm. Just like when we remember that certain song from high school or junior high that brings back a particular memory, or our favorite hymn that brings back a particular memory of a time in our lives, food does the same thing. So it is no mistake that when Christ chose an institution for us to remember him by, he chose the meal of communion. He could have chosen anything, but he knows that we are sensual people, and there's something about the bread and wine that brings us together as we break the bread, the fruit of the earth, the bounty of the grain. And it's the same thing with the foods that we share when we talk about those heirloom recipes and the times that we share together around the family table. And so that's why I'm passionate about this, passionate about, I could have written a cookbook on any kind of subject, but I chose the subject of Sunday dinner because I think that the value that we gain as a society and the value that we gain as members of a family and an extended family and a communion are really special ones that can be at these set-aside times, whether they be a Memorial Day picnic or whether they be Thanksgiving or whether they be Sunday dinner.
Russell, you also have another great book that I picked up, and I think we have to find them used, which is really pretty easy to do this these days on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. I think it's Return to Picnics.
Yeah,
it's perfect for this time of the year. It's perfect for this time of year. So
re-release that as well. And, you know, that is something that is also very special. You know, I think about this often in relationship to Sunday dinner. The church picnic, the Sunday picnic, you know, sometimes we want to get together with the family and maybe the formality of the Sunday dinner table might be a bit too much, or maybe there's a large family and we just don't have a big enough house. There are parks all around our communities, all around our neighborhoods, all around our cities, you know, where we can go and have an extended group together for a picnic. And again, there are all these wonderful foods that we associate with picnic. We went on a picnic on Mother's Day. I live here just across the river from Washington, D.C., and we all, well, family went down to the National Mall, and we were sitting there by the pool, by the Capitol, and we laid out our blankets, and we brought fried chicken and coleslaw, and you know, potato salad and lemonade, and cupcakes, and we had a wonderful Mother's Day picnic together, and those are special memories, and they're not expensive to do.
No, no. And they can be such memory heirloom builders. Now, Selena, thank you so much for waiting patiently there on the phone. Can you tell us where you're calling from, and do you have a question or comment for our guest, Russell Cronkite?
Yes, I'm from Cedar Hill, and I've been listening to you guys this morning, and it's just wonderful. You're bringing up all kinds of memories. I can remember we had a swimming pool in our backyard and when I was growing up, and so Sunday dinner through the summer always included the outdoor picnic and that type of thing, because everybody always came over to our house and we'd have dinner there, and it was amazing. But we have taken it one step further now. As adults without grandchildren at home and children at home any longer, my husband and I have started a Bible study group on Wednesday night that we call the Bread and the Word. And we meet every Wednesday and at different homes for the couples that are in this group. And each couple fixes the meal that night. And then we have our Bible study and dessert afterwards. And the memories and the being able to talk around the table and really get into some good discussions is just, you know, amazing. And we share those recipes and that kind of thing together as well. Everybody wants to make their best for their particular Wednesday night.
Well, that's a wonderful thought, and you know, we can just be creative and expand this. So, thanks for that great comment, and thanks for listening, Selena.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for your book and everything. I've really enjoyed this program.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Hey, Russell, tell us about your special Easter Sunday menu called An Ancient Heritage. That one is. I know a part of a lot of families' tradition by, what is it, the center, the highlight of that menu. I don't know if you have the cookbook there in front of
you. I have it right in front of me. Okay. And I'm sitting here looking at this photograph of this wonderful roast leg of lamb. And, you know, I divide Sunday dinner, Easter dinner into two categories: those who have ham and those who have lamb. And you know, I think it depends on, you know, so much of our heritage. But folks who have a Armenian or Greek or Middle Eastern background will probably be folks who grew up having a lamb for Easter Sunday, versus those of us from maybe the Midwest or the South that would more or less have ham and sometimes both. But you know, Easter is such a great Sunday dinner. It's the first Sunday dinner, and you know, I put together a menu there that really has as its basis a Greek American heritage background, and you know, really centered it around the idea of the tradition of the Greek Easter, or the Eastern Orthodox Easter. I think when I was putting this book together, actually the Eastern Orthodox Easter and the Western Easter ended up being on the same Sunday, which is something that doesn't occur too often. But you know, one of the things I wanted to explore in that chapter, in ancient heritage, is that we do come from diverse backgrounds, and we are, as I've said, a nation of immigrants. And so we bring all of these wonderful experiences to the American table. And I wrote in the chapter intro about, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. Capitol and our libraries, all these neoclassical columns at the White House. You know, Greek architecture points to our shared ideals of democracy, self-governance, and the arts. And, you know, so we don't, you know, sometimes when we remember a heritage, we have to remember what that heritage means to our nation and what it brought to our nation. And parts of those things, of course, are, you know, foods as well. So my family goes back and forth on Easter. We either have a leg of lamb with roasted red skin potatoes, and maybe we do grilled zucchini and eggplant with feta cheese and tomatoes, which is out of my book. Sometimes we do an orange-soaked honey walnut cake, something that really has that Greek Middle Eastern influence. And then we alternate that with doing, you know, the traditional ham as well from the South, which is actually the last chapter in my book, which is a glazed country ham with peach chutney and thyme-scented scalloped potatoes and Sally Lunn bread. And
oh, stop. It's getting close to noon. It's getting close to lunch, Russell. You're killing us.
I know. I'm trying to.
And you know, I was going to say,
one of my missions in life.
Yeah. If you have a big family or a group of bunch eaters like mine, probably do both the ham and the lamb.
That's correct.
I love the tradition, too, that you have here of, and I'd never heard this before, about everyone around the table takes a brightly colored egg before you begin the meal and crack it against that held by your neighbor, and you celebrate the sound echoing that of the stone being rolled away from the empty tomb. And as you break the eggs, you exchange the traditional blessing, "Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, hallelujah." That is marvelous.
That's a very Greek American and a Greek tradition, the blessing of the Easter basket at the Orthodox Church, and then the sharing, the cracking of the eggs on Easter morning. I did want to say that we've been talking about photographs, talking about food, and talking about memories and menus, and I do have a website, returntosundaydinner.com, and there's some stunning photographs, and so many of the things that we've shared are on the website, as well as a recipe sampler. I'm sitting here actually looking at the photo of the lamb on my website rather than in my book. But anyway, yes, that's those are, again, a special tradition. Sort of think of my big fat Greek wedding, for lack of a better analogy. There are these wonderful traditions that we all have in our families and our heritage that are special. And so, yes, dyeing the Easter eggs red to represent the blood of Christ, you know, having them blessed, ending the fast on Easter morning, cracking the eggs together in celebration. You know, these are things that have gone on for, you know, hundreds of years in families and all different kinds of traditions. Easter especially, with a special Easter bread, whether it's hot cross buns or babka. Again, there are specific foods that we always think about when we think about a special time, whether it's our favorite birthday cake, our favorite dessert at Thanksgiving, our favorite meal around Easter, our favorite picnic, something that causes us to remember, and not just remember the food, but remember the people who were there and the memories that we shared together and the value that they bring and brought into our lives.
And again, I think the beauty of your approach is that these recipes are not all that difficult, and you can certainly go the complex route if you desire, but these are pretty solid, easy to use, and you've even got the adaptation already there of the time-saving do-ahead tips, and so where people aren't stressed out and can enjoy each other's company. And so many regional, and I think, you know, what my joy today to cook for people is before they come to ask them what you really like, what have you really craved recently that you haven't had, and then I try to find a recipe or develop one. And so our listener can easily do that by asking and then just go in your index and finding something, because there's so much in here. And we haven't enjoyed this again so much, Russell. Thanks for being our guest. And we're going to put a link right to your website so that people can go right there, get the book, see that sample menu, and learn about your history. And Russell, we just thank you for helping us to return to a truly important tradition here in the United States of a Sunday dinner for families, where we gather around God's bounty, gather together as people after worship. We share his love, and we share our love for each other's. So thank you so much. Do you have anything else in the works cookbook-wise?
Not at this particular moment, I'm hoping that we'll begin to, put all different kinds of ideas together and see what we can come up with. Thank you so much, Rod, again, for letting me have, be a guest on your show, and I enjoyed the fellowship and the time that we spend together, and the conversation has been wonderful.
It is for us as well, too, Russell, and we thank you for being our guest now a couple of times, and I've got to really go clean up because I've been salivating all over the place. this is just, and food really does that, and we've talked about, the strong sense of bringing back the memories of flavors and taste and smells and good conversation, good devotions in God's Word, good prayer life. We can't get any better than that. So God's richest blessings on you, Russell, and your family, and your family meals and devotions together.
Thank you.
Join us next week when we will center in on another family and faith topic. Next week is going to be parenting. We are on a holiday on Monday, and I didn't know of anything better to do than rerun this show so that people can think about these family meals together and even consider this Return to Sunday Dinner book or the Return to Picnic. And then we're going to have on some experts sharing a book about Christian parenting. Dr. Beverly Yonke will be on us with some of her experiences helping parenting. We'll have a blended parenting. And then let's give to Selena the free cookbook. Selena, if you're listening, please call us or email us with your mailing address. We will send out a copy of Russell's wonderful cookbook, Return to Sunday Dinner. So invite some people, get your extended family, create a great meal, go online, get this cookbook, have a blessed and safe Memorial weekend, and let's see you again on Monday here on Faith and Family.